Breaking news, Congress says they have a deal to avoid a shutdown. The big question, will the president sign it? Will Congress pass it? We'll talk about it today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Bipartisan lawmakers reaching a, quote, agreement in principle as we inch closer to the next shutdown deadline. But a lot of big things need to happen before that proposal becomes law. For starters, the deal has to be negotiated by Congress and then signed by the president.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
An agreement in principle, as you know, that is Washington speak for. We'll see what happens. There's still plenty of horse trading to be done here in the nation's capital. That is if, and it's a big if, the deal will eventually cross the finish line here at the White House.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Two issues to get to right away. First of all, we have got the reports now of a, and those have been confirmed, that there's this agreement in principle between the bipartisan negotiators in Congress on a funding bill that would prevent the government from shutting down. Remember, we're getting closer and closer to the potential shutdown on Friday at midnight. So this deal would have to be put forward to Congress very soon. And again, they can pass one-day spending bills. We don't have to get too in the weeds on that if they need an extra day. But the big question is, what's exactly in it? The White House has not received this yet, so they don't know about the nuances. So far, they don't know if they're supporting the bipartisan agreement in principle. What we are finding out is that there's not a there is a significant amount. I mean, there's $1.3 billion for wall funding for an additional 55 miles of border walls and barriers. Certainly, that's not the $5.7 billion the president was looking for. At the same time, the president could sign this and go somewhere else or announce that when we have utilized those funds and spent that money and built that, I will look elsewhere. Here's where I will go next. If Congress doesn't authorize more funds, I can go here. Of course, you could. The national emergency option is still an option as well. We don't want to totally take that off the table. So this could be something that ultimately is signed by the president along with another step of executive action. Let me go right to Washington, D.C., Than Bennett. Than, what is the reaction so far in Washington? I mean, I think first it was surprised that they reached this deal always. Again, it's in principle. So at any point, I think this could this could go down in flames quickly, but it looks like this will actually get a vote in Congress.
Yeah, it sure does look like that, Jordan. Looks like it'll get a vote in both chambers. I mean, I think we need to stress again, we're all basing this off of reports. We haven't seen legislative text. Senator Shelby says that he expects to have text by tonight. Senator Lowy thinks it might not be until tomorrow. So everything we talk about today is really based on what we are hearing is in that deal. But Jordan, I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. A deal struck by Congress has some good, some bad, and some ugly. That's a little bit of a mess. I would summarize just two points for you very quickly. It sounds like there's $1.375 billion for a wall in there, and I would say there's some good and some bad in there. Jordan, the good is that for the first time, Democrats are going to authorize, it looks like, new money for new construction of 55 miles of wall. That's about a quarter of what the president has wanted to construct. Jordan, that is unequivocally good, I think. Unequivocally bad, the $1.375 billion, it's nowhere close to what the president had requested. So I think you're correct in saying that if he decides to sign this bill, if it's as reported, I think he might do that. He may have to look elsewhere to finish the amount of construction he would want to do on the wall. But Jordan, I'll just sum up in this segment by saying, let's see what happens. Let's see what the legislative text says when it comes out either tonight or tomorrow.
What do you think should happen, folks? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. You think the president should sign something that doesn't have all of the money he was looking for and then take executive action and announce that as well? I think it'd have to come kind of simultaneously. Again, we could look at a shutdown. If there's too many strings attached to all of this, there could be another shutdown. I mean, I don't think anybody wants that, including the president, but that it's still, that's on the table because there's a deadline of Friday at midnight. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, and we will address the statement by Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats condemning Congressman Omar and then her fake apology. And why are we calling it that? We'll explain it when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now, other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And we're examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
So a bipartisan agreement has been reached in principle by negotiators from Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate. From the appropriations committees of those both the House and the Senate and both parties to avert another government shutdown. That would have to get to the president's desk before Friday at midnight. There are ways, if you need to extend funding for 24 hours, you can do that without having to face a shutdown. We don't know entirely what is in this deal. We do know that the funding for new border wall is there. So there is funding for new border walls or whatever you want to call them. They call it bollard fencing. That's the big steel slats, 55 miles of that. The president could accept this and then along with it say, you know, if you don't fund it when we're done with those 55 miles, I'm going to go here for more money. We'll explain that to you as well. Certainly he could reject this and say, you know, this again, it's not, I said I wouldn't sign this. I'm not going to sign this. We want to get your thoughts on it. 1-800-684-3110. As people are calling in on that, I have to update you on Congressman Omar's hypocrisy and her doubling down really of her anti-Semitic remarks. I'll explain that here. You know, she said all about the Benjamins and why is, you know, American politicians support Israel. And she used that anti-Semitic trope that it's all about Jewish money. And she doubled down on that, did not apologize on her own when she had the opportunity to. So she got condemned by the Democrat leadership who called on her to apologize. Here's the this came from right after we were on the air yesterday, actually. So it was boiling and boiling, and I think Nancy Pelosi realized she had to do something. Her statement is not so bad. I mean, Speaker Pelosi, Majority Leader Hoyer, the Majority Whip Clyburn, Assistant Speaker Ray Lujan, the Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries, Caucus Chair Kathleen Clark. So basically the entire House Democrat leadership signed on to the statement. And it says, anti-Semitism must be called out, confronted, and condemned whenever it is encountered without exception. That's good. We are and will always be strong supporters of Israel in Congress because we understand that our support is based on shared values and strategic interests. That's right. That's a good way of explaining why the United States has such a strong relationship with Israel is that, again, shared democratic values, especially in a region of the world where there's not much of that, and strategic interests. So it benefits the United States as well to have an ally like Israel in that region. They allow for, they said, legitimate criticism of Israel's policies is protected by the values of free speech and democratic debate that the United States and Israel share. Sure, there's people in Israel that disagree with their government. That doesn't make them less Israeli. And you can do that as an American elected official. But as they say, Congresswoman Omar's use of anti-Semitic tropes and prejudicial accusation about Israel supporters is deeply offensive. We condemn these remarks. So strong language there. And we call upon Congresswoman Omar to immediately apologize for these hurtful comments. As Democrats and as Americans, the entire Congress must be fully engaged in denouncing and rejecting all forms of hatred, racism, prejudice, and discrimination wherever they're encountered. Okay, so strong condemnation. And what did they ask for there? An apology. Well, Congresswoman Omar, she responded. Okay, so the first part of her response is not so bad. She says, and this is her statement, anti-Semitism is real, and I am grateful for Jewish allies and colleagues who are educating me on the painful history of anti-Semitic tropes. Again, this idea that she doesn't know about that history and she's elected to Congress and on the Foreign Affairs Committee of all committees is kind of unique, but we'll save that for a moment. My intention is to never offend my constituents, who are mostly Somali Muslims, or Jewish Americans as a whole. That's fine. We have to always be willing to step back and think through criticism, just as I expect to hear people to hear me when others attack me for identity. This is why I unequivocally apologize. Okay, so you'd think the statement would end there, right? Because she says, I unequivocally apologize. There's some issues with that opening statement that I think you can dissect. Like, what about when people attack me? And, you know, trying to shift the issues. But she doesn't stop. She writes, I unequivocally apologize. Maybe need a grammar lesson. Because usually if you unequivocally apologize, you leave it there. No, she doesn't. At the same time, this is in her words, at the same time, I reaffirm the problematic role of lobbyists in our politics, whether it be AIPAC, the NRA, or the fossil fuel industry. She doesn't say Planned Parenthood, the abortion industry, or other leftist causes that are also active in our government processes. And so in her apology, she doubles down on her attack on the largest pro-Israel group in the United States and the most bipartisan. And then later retweets a comment attacking AIPAC and Jewish money's control of American politics. Later on last night. So she's doubled down on her same criticism that she was called out for. So Than, we believe at this point, joining with other groups, that she must be removed by Nancy. But first of all, in the retweet, she attacks the retweet that she sent out also attacks Nancy Pelosi. So if Nancy Pelosi is really the Speaker of the House and the leader of the Democrats and the House of Representatives, the people's body, she should remove Congressman Omar at least from the Foreign Affairs Committee, where she can get classified briefings on the Middle East, for instance, at a place where she doesn't even understand.
Yeah, Jordan, we've said it so many times on this broadcast. I mean, actions have are louder than words. They have more consequences than words. And I would look at two people. First of all, Congressman Omar. Yeah, like you said, part of that apology, the words were fine, but her actions speak so much louder. They demonstrate an anti-Semitic bias and a desire to fracture our alliance with Israel. That shouldn't be accepted by either party, and those actions dwarf her words. As for Speaker Pelosi and the Democrat leadership, Jordan, there is an action that should be automatic here. It looks to me like they're just trying to get political cover by extracting this apology from the Congresswoman. But Jordan, we talked about this in the break. The fact that the Congresswoman sits on the House Foreign Affairs Committee gives her a disproportionately large voice inside her party on U.S. foreign policy. That's just simply not acceptable. If Speaker Pelosi and the rest of the Democrat leadership mean what they say, Jordan, and they say that her views are out of line with their party, then they should not be affording her that seat on the committee. They need to follow up their words with actions and remove her from the committee. And quite frankly, Jordan, I think on the political point, you're also right about the affront to leadership. I think if this happened inside either party on basically any issue but this one, and a member of that party confronted the leadership in this kind of disrespectful way, I think the consequences would be swift, and they need to be in this case.
If you have comments on this, we'll take them at 1-800-684-3110. I want to play Steve Scalise, and then we'll get back to the bipartisan agreement potentially. I think we may come back to the Omar issue as well, because it's kind of still developing. She decided after that fake apology to double down on her attack on AIPAC, which she did by retweeting someone attacking AIPAC and attacking Nancy Pelosi. So you would think Nancy Pelosi would take notice of it. Now, she may hope this kind of gets covered up in the news of, is there going to be a shutdown? Is there a budget deal? We're not going to allow that. That's why I say we'll come back to it. And I'm also watching, we're watching closely what Congressman Omar is saying. What is Nancy Pelosi going to say in response? If anything, are they going to try to just let this go? Which I think is what they hoped would happen after the apology, but it wasn't a real apology. Not accepted, Congressman Omar. You have to do better, and so does Nancy Pelosi. And this is not really a partisan issue. I mean, I think if you were a Democrat, you'd want Nancy Pelosi to take swift action on this because, again, you allow this, you're going to allow this very – if you really believe this is such a horrible viewpoint, why are you empowering them while they're still poking you? Not Republicans, but going after the Democrat leadership. Let me play Steve Scalise. This is the GOP whip in the House of Representatives. Here he is. Take a listen.
Think about this. Right now, she sits on the Foreign Affairs Committee. She's able to get classified briefings on foreign policy, especially as it relates to Israel. And yet she's made statements, anti-Israel, anti-Jewish statements, aligned herself with anti-Semitic people as well. She should be removed from the Foreign Affairs Committee. That's something Nancy Pelosi should do immediately.
You're right. I mean, she got elected by her constituents. And you can say free speech, you can say anything you want, fine. She doesn't have to be empowered by House leadership to be on the committee that gets classified briefings on American foreign policy when she herself says she needs so much education on the painful history of anti-Semitism in America. And what is an anti-Semitic remark? Which she obviously is saying in her apology, she doesn't know the difference between what's anti-Semitic and what would be a legitimate policy discussion. And she can't figure that out. She certainly shouldn't be figuring out and getting any special information about our foreign affairs. That doesn't mean you unelect. She's elected by her people, but every member of Congress is not on the Foreign Affairs Committee, including, you know, every Democrat's not on the Foreign Affairs Committee. I would believe that there's somebody better in the Democrat caucus to fill that seat on the Foreign Affairs Committee who may be very liberal, who I might disagree with on every issue, but is not putting out anti-Semitism through their Twitter account and using their position in Congress to promote those kind of ideas. All right, so we've updated you on that. If you have calls about it, if you have questions about it, we're taking them at 1-800-684-3110. But I think the bigger issue of the moment for all of us is the potential deal in Congress. Let's reset that. And the president's, will it pass Congress? That's what we'll discuss. Should be a pretty interesting mix if it does, a bipartisanship. Will the president sign it? And if he does he sign it by announcing some other executive action on more border security, more wall funding? So we're going to start taking your calls on that at 1-800-684-3110. People are calling in. I think they have a lot to say. What do you think the president should do if this makes it to his desk? Do you do another shutdown? Do you agree with this, even though the funding is... There is funding for wall there, 55 new miles. It should pass Congress, but certainly it's far away. It's $4 billion less than what he wanted. Do you sign it so you avert a shutdown and then announce ways you're going to find the money elsewhere? We want your thoughts. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And for examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. It's Jordan Sekulow, and we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Again, on the Congressman Omar situation, we explained it in the last segment. We're going to keep updating you on this. Nancy Pelosi and the House leadership condemned the comments yesterday, called for an apology. It was a fake apology. When she said it was an unequivocal apology, she kept going and then said, at the same time, it attacked AIPAC. Then she retweeted someone later on last night who was attacking Nancy Pelosi. And she endorsed the statement, by the way, with a fist up. So it wasn't like just a retweet. It was endorsement of the statement. Who was attacking AIPAC, attacking Jewish money and pro-Israel money in politics in America, and attacking Nancy Pelosi. So we believe, you know, she needs to be removed. She's on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. It's an action Nancy Pelosi could take, a real action, not just words, that obviously this is the member of Congress. You know, she didn't even understand how to do an apology. She admits in her apology she doesn't know what she's saying and what's not. And even, let's say you take that and believe it. I don't. I think she knows exactly what she's doing. But let's take that. Don't empower her on the House Foreign Affairs Committee then. She's not the right person to be getting classified briefings on American foreign policy if she doesn't understand how her language is being used. Not could be used even, is being used. So, and I think she's attacking Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, have some guts as Speaker and do something about your own party. I think it would go a long way to helping Democrats. And I'm not someone who's, you know, helping, you know, trying to give out a lot of advice to help the left. But at the same time, you know, I think you put an interest in this kind of situation. You're putting American interests above partisan politics by getting this specific individual. Put some other lefty on there who understands the difference between being a liberal and anti-Semitism, for instance, and those kind of remarks, is more careful in their tone. And that, again, totally in their purview. They won the majority of the House. But you don't have to empower people like her to be on the Foreign Affairs Committee. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. The biggest news is that, Than, the House and Senate negotiators have announced that they have in principle an agreement that they think they can get into legislative text and have a vote on that would avert a government shutdown. Let's explain to people what it's about.
Yeah, so the staff is working right now to put it into legislative text. We'll know exactly what it is when we can see that text. But by all reports, Jordan, they seem to agree to have an agreement based around a couple of pillars, one of which, probably the one that people care the most about, is apparently it's going to include $1.375 billion for new wall, new construction, about 55 miles worth. Jordan, we've talked about on this broadcast many times that we are going to be looking for two things. First of all, the amount. I would tell you that the amount of 1.375 is not very good. It's lower than the Senate Appropriations Committee passed out previously. But the second thing we were going to look for was new authority for new wall. In that regard, Jordan, all the reports suggest that that language is pretty good, that it would authorize new construction, new wall for 55 miles worth of new construction. So sort of a mixed bag on that front. And then just quickly, there was another dispute over how many detention beds ICE could have. And just very quickly, that would be a limit on the number of criminals, Jordan, that ICE could hold. Shockingly, Democrats, and I really can't justify this to you, they wanted to put a cap on the number of criminals that ICE could detain. There are currently about 49,000 being detained. They wanted to lower that all the way down somewhere around 16,000. Yes, the practical effect of that would ICE would literally have to release 33,000 criminals. Jordan, that language appears to have been dropped. It looks like there won't be a statutory cap. We don't know exactly how they're going to work that out, but it looks like it will be similar to the funding that was in previous bills. So $1.375 billion for new wall, and then something along the lines of the status quo as far as the number of detention beds that ICE can have.
All right, let's go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. We have a question on those detention beds. Specifically, Robert in Virginia on line one and a comment on it. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you. Boy, with all that talk about anti-Semitic congresswoman and even throwing in the afterbirth abortion, it's tough to stay on track with the the border enforcement.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, the left is like throwing down. It's like day after day. It's Ralph Northam, you know, the Virginia mess. And they're creating a lot of issues, which are, I'm not going to call them distractions, because you have to address things like this, you know, Robert. So, I mean, that's what we're trying to do. At the same time, I do want to get to, you know, like what you were saying, which is these issues like the border and also the potential for a shutdown, which affects every single person very immediately. Go ahead,
right.
Robert.
So if we're only getting a quarter of President Trump's requested funding for the barrier, then actually I think the number of detention beds should go up, not down. But apparently this is in question, and there are a lot of things in this bill. I think we need another three-week extension so the American people can examine this bill.
Well, I mean, that's the question, Than, is on this detention bed issue, which is kind of a new issue in the last 48 hours for everybody. I think that for the left it's been an issue, but for now, you know, now that the American people are kind of learning that this is something they want to put in place, we explain to people what Robert is referring to. I mean, I know you briefly talked about it, this idea of 40,000-ish and maybe go up from there. But what was the left trying to do? And I think Mitch McConnell had to come out and say, no, you know, we're not going to ever put that forward.
He did, and you're right, Jordan. This has been an issue for the left in Washington for some time, and I think the American people need to be better educated and understand what the left is asking for here. Let me summarize it this way. Currently, ICE has funding for about 40,000 beds. You need a bed to detain someone in order to keep them, and they detain criminals, Jordan. We're talking about not just people that are illegally present. We're talking about people that have committed crimes above and beyond that. Now, in addition to those 40,000 beds that ICE uses, they are also able to reprogram a limited amount of dollars from other sources. So they currently actually have about 49,000 criminals in detention, have beds for 49,000 criminals. The president, Jordan, had asked for 52,000 because there's a growing need for more detention space. Democrats and the left in Washington have asked for a statutory cap, a limit on the number of beds and people, criminals, that the administration is able to detain. And Jordan, they don't want it to be limited somewhere around the number currently detained. They actually want it to be down somewhere around 16,000. So the practical effect of that is you would be releasing somewhere between 30 and 40,000 detained criminals back into the society for no reason other than the left doesn't want them to be detained. That language, Jordan, it appears like is not in this agreement, which is a good thing. But I do think the American people need to understand exactly what the left is asking for. Yeah. They are literally asking for a statutory limit on the number of criminals that ICE can detain, as if, Jordan, you're going to be able to predict how many criminals you can pick up. And if you pick one up, Jordan, you shouldn't have to release them.
Let's go to Brian's calling Kentucky on line 4. Our second half hour is coming up, so we'll continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Brian, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, you know, pertaining to that, you know, I think the offer that the Democrats are trying to pass over is nothing more than political posturing. Up until this point, they haven't been willing to concede anything. You know, the $1.3 billion, you know, 55 miles of border fencing, that's great, but it still leaves a lot of open, porous border for trafficking to come through and drugs and, you know, people who are coming over here to do things that are illegal.
Well, I think, Brian, this leads into perfectly for a second half hour, which is if the president were to sign this, and he's speaking at a cabinet meeting now, so we're going to get some of the sound from that to see if he addressed it or if he's still saying we're still looking at it. But if the president were to sign this, there are other executive action steps. A lot of people talk about the national emergency option. That is one of but there are others as well to look for funding. So it is a way you could move forward. And I don't think anybody wants to box the president in as they're looking at all of those options. They say they've got a number of options at the White House. I think it would need to be announced around the same time, though, for the president's supporters who have been with him on the shutdown and been with him on building the wall and the need for that. We got second half hour coming up. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Bipartisan lawmakers reaching a, quote, agreement in principle as we inch closer to the next shutdown deadline. But a lot of big things need to happen before that proposal becomes law. For starters, the deal has to be negotiated by Congress and then signed by the president.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Join us. Thanks for joining us for the second half hour. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. I think, you know, first off, we addressed the situation, if you're just joining us, in the first half hour with Congressman Omar that we were focused on yesterday. She ultimately was condemned by the Democrat leadership in the House, like Nancy Pelosi and her deputies. She issued a fake apology where she said she unequivocally apologized, doesn't know anything, sorry, to American Jews. I guess not Jews everywhere, just American Jews. And but then after saying she unequivocally apologized, said at the same time, and then she attacked AIPAC again. So she attacked the largest pro-Israel bipartisan group, which, by the way, as a bipartisan group, doesn't make donations to campaigns on either side of the aisle. It's very careful. AIPAC does not stand for Political Action Committee. It's Political Affairs Committee. So it's not an actual PAC. People get confused. I think Congressman Omar probably still doesn't understand that. It's not a PAC. For the political purposes, this name sounds that way, and people start assuming that. And even if it were, in a bipartisan sense, I mean, this is a very pro-Israel country for a lot of reasons. Our Judeo-Christian heritage, the strategic alliance between Israel and the United States, they're on the front lines of the terrorism that we fight. And also, it's a democratic partner in a region which is mostly controlled by dictators, kings, and has not had a great history of liberal democracy. Liberal, you know, in the capital sense of the term. I mean, just the idea of being like the United States and having the free and fair elections. And again, there are ways you could criticize Israeli policy as a member of Congress without going after all Jews in America. So again, I think that the truth is that if you're going to attack groups like AIPAC, it's just a dog whistle. Anyone who knows anything, and Than, just quickly on this, and we're going to get back to the shutdown issue, hopefully not a shutdown, but maybe a bipartisan deal, but AIPAC itself, they are like the most careful group not to be partisan.
Yeah, I
mean, frustratingly
honestly,
so Jordan, sometimes. I get frustrated sometimes.
I think many on the right say that they can be too weak in their view. Those aren't my words. I think many on the right would say on some issues they appear too weak because they try to be so careful, Jordan, to be bipartisan, to contribute on both sides of the aisle. And I agree with your statement that I think they try harder in that vein than maybe any other interest group here in town. So whether you agree with him or you don't agree with him, I think the right and the left are equally frustrated at different times because they do try to straddle that line so carefully.
We're monitoring the president's comments he made, you know, during his before his cabinet meeting, allows the press in, and then they play that after to see if he said anything yet on this bipartisan deal in principle to avoid another government shutdown, fund 55 miles of border barrier wall, whatever you want to call it. It's the bollard fencing, which is those big steel slates that you've seen along the border, but new versions of that. The president said that he isn't thrilled with it, so. There you go. There's the first indication, Than, right away. We could try to rewind and get that sound from the president, but not thrilled with it. I think that's probably fair with any kind of bipartisan agreement at this point, though, is that no one's going to be thrilled with anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's honest, Jordan. I think that's consistent with what we said. There's good, bad, and ugly in here. I think he probably likes the new authority. I think he probably doesn't like the dollar amount. I think he feels like he needs more, Jordan. But I think he's doing the right thing by waiting for the legislative text and then reviewing his options. We can get into some of these, but I do think it might be a viable option for him to sign this, get as far as he can with Congress's help, and then go from there. Maybe this is a first step, even if it's small. He's not thrilled with it. I think that's pretty accurate, Jordan.
All right, folks, we're going to start taking your phone calls again. We come back from the break. We have a line open, 1-800-684-3110. Those of you who've been holding on, Lisa, Julie, Joyce, and Lillian, we will get to you right when we come back from the break. We'll start taking those phone calls again on this issue. 1-800-684-3110. What should the president do? Since he's not thrilled by it, that's certainly not saying I'll absolutely, you know, veto it if it comes to my desk yet. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And for examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. The president just addressed before the cabinet meeting, and those are those remarks that the media records and then they release right after. He addressed some of the issues involving this reported bipartisan deal in principle to avoid another government shutdown that would likely pass both the House and the Senate and end up on the president's desk. At this point, we could say that. It appears that it would be able to pass. It does have some funding for the wall. I think there's going to be Republicans and Democrats who vote against it, and Republicans and Democrats who vote for it. So you're not going to see, it would not be so straight party line on this one at this point, though. There may be especially in Congress, not as much for those who are kind of more in the middle of the road, who don't want to see it as being, you know, in support for another shutdown. The president said he's not thrilled by it at this point, and we'll play some of that for you in a moment. At the same time, he did not say, I will definitely veto it. It does have funding for new border wall in it. So it'd be interesting to see how Nancy Pelosi is going to try to spin that because she said there'll be not a dime for that. So certainly there's been some kind of compromise. I will tell you that it's not the $5 billion the president was looking for. It's kind of moves the ball forward on building more wall. But I think he would have to take some other executive action to build it in the time frame. Because if you went at this speed, it would take 25 years to get this done based off the estimates of how much it would cost. So that would not be good for the president. But I wanted to get to the phone calls, and we'll start getting the discussion in again on the broadcast as well. We've got some others joining us now. Let's go right to the phones, and Joyce in D.C. on line three. Joyce, welcome to JSEC Live. I wanted to get your comment because I want to let people know that we've been addressing this matter involving Congressman Omar.
Yes. Well, I have two. As far as Omar is concerned, I believe I feel Pelosi should remove her from the Foreign Affairs Committee and out of Congress, period, because there's a possibility she might be there just to cover up. But anyway, I'd like to say another thing about the wall real quick. Yep. I'm a native Washingtonian, a federal employee for over 30 years, native Washingtonian, and I do not want the president to sign anything. I don't mind going on furlough. He is the only president who has been seriously working towards keeping us safe, and I admire him for that, and I admire this you and your organization also. But Omar, I have a funny feeling about.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's something weird going on. I mean, I don't know how far it goes. But whether, I mean, she's like a spokesperson for like Al-Shabaab type group. I mean, really. So you get a cheerleader for them, which is bizarre in that world because usually coming out of the hard Islamist world, you wouldn't have a woman, you know, as your spokesperson or as your cheerleader, but unless you're trying to pull something on people. And it's her own fault that she's being characterized this way because it's not just her time in Congress, her time leading up to Congress, she was making, you know, apologizing for their, making up excuses for their actions. And so whether it was the mall attack in Kenya by Al-Shabaab, whether it was members of the Somali American community trying to join out ISIS and saying, oh, go lenient on them. They're upset because of blaming America for why they're trying to join ISIS. I think on the shutdown issue, it's very interesting to hear from actual federal employees who say that, you know, that they're willing to go back on furlough to get the border wall funding. Let me go to Wes and Harry Hutchinson as well. Wes Smith and Harry Hutchinson on this issue. And Wes, we hear this from federal employees. We also know there's plenty who probably would not want to go back on furlough again. I'm not sure there's a – listen, there could definitely be a shutdown still, maybe a shorter one. And we can't predict at this point based off what's out there. But I think what is unique about this is that there is some funding for the wall. It puts the president in a unique spot about how to kind of – and the Democrats like Nancy Pelosi who said they weren't going to fund a dime. So how are they all going to vote on it?
Right. It's sort of a good news, bad news result if this is how it ends up in that the president is getting some money for a wall. This, according to the White House, will allow them to construct about 55 miles of barrier along the Rio Grande, and that's good, and that's along with another 37 miles that's being completed as we speak. But on the other hand, it's political gamesmanship at work again on the part of the Democrats, even though national security, drug cartels, human trafficking, innocent lives are all at stake here. And yet they came in and they're clever. They're clever negotiators. I doubt their sincerity about border security because this poison pill, as Mitch McConnell called it yesterday, was when they came in and they thought everything was done. And they said, oh, by the way, we want to limit the number of detainee beds to 16,000. You know, the people that have been arrested and detained, most of them, the vast majority have criminal records. And there are a lot more than 16,000 of them in custody. They threw this in. I think they knew when they threw it in that they would not press this issue, that they are willing to negotiate, but they put it in there so that the Republicans would fight that. It was a feint, as we call it in the military, you know, to divert their attention to this so that it appears that the Republican negotiators have reached a deal. They've won something. And actually, all they're doing is a status quo. They will have essentially the same number of detainee beds as they have now. So they won nothing. But the Democrats used it as a feint so they would fight over that. And then at the end of all of this, they're still only giving $1.3 billion, which is a meager amount for a barrier on the border when you look at all the things that are going on down there.
All right, let's play. This is President Trump just moments ago from the cabinet meeting and kind of get reaction on this. Take a listen.
I can tell you that am I happy at first glance? I just got to see it. The answer is no, I'm not. I'm not happy. But am I happy with where we're going? I'm thrilled. Because we're supplementing things and moving things around, and we're doing things that are fantastic and taking from far less, really from far less important areas. And the bottom line is we're building a lot of wall. Right now, we're building a lot of wall.
Yeah, so again, I think, Harry, I interpret that as I might go along with this. I mean, I think that President may be indicating that I don't love this, but we're getting to build a lot of wall. We're already building wall. This lets us, I think in his mind, Nancy Pelosi, you lost because you said there'll never be a dime for new wall funding. And here you go. These, you've said you'd accept what the bipartisan negotiators say, at least allow a vote on it. So that may be the issue as well. I mean, I'm just kind of trying to break down what the president just said.
Well, I think your analysis is absolutely correct. I think the deal is indeed a mixed bag, but there is new funding for a border wall, and that constitutes progress. Is the progress sufficient enough? I don't know. Does the plan include more money, for instance, for more judges? Does the plan include funding for more border agents? Does the plan include more funding for humanitarian purposes? And so I think it remains to be seen whether the president will sign it because it is indeed a mixed bag. And I think, as Wesley correctly pointed out earlier, the Democrats are playing, in my opinion, a cynical game by throwing in so-called poison pills. It's important to note that the talks nearly collapsed over the weekend after the Democrats pushed to reduce funding for detention beds. Why did they do that? Because they wanted to curb the power of ICE, despite the fact that nearly 66% of the nearly 159,000 migrants reported detaining last year were previously convicted of crimes. It's also important to note that during the Obama administration in 2016, approximately 86% of the detainees had committed crimes in addition to crossing the border illegally. So I think we are dealing with some cynics, particularly coming from the Democratic side. And so I think the key issue is whether or not there is sufficient progress at the end of the day so that the president can sign it. I think the positive news is that this agreement, if it goes through, will force a Nancy Pelosi, at least some members of her party, to support funding a wall.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's like President Trump has said now, and I think this is pretty breaking, that he doesn't think there will be a shutdown. So I think that's a lot of indication about where he'd be if what he's getting reported to by this bipartisan committee is what actually makes into legislative text that ends up on his desk. Take a listen, Byte 33.
I don't think you're going to see a shutdown. I wouldn't want to go to it now. If you did have it, it's a Democrat's fault. And I accepted the first one, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished, because people learned during that shutdown all about the problems coming in from the southern border. I've always accepted it. But this one, I would never accept if it happens, but I don't think it's going to happen. But this would be totally on the Democrats.
So again, it's trying to say, like, are they going to try the poison pill options, again, make it impossible for to pass even, or the president to sign if it gets to his desk? But he doesn't think that. So he's not preparing, it doesn't look like, to veto it in its current reported form. We're going to take your calls when we come back. 1-800-684-3110.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And for examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Coming back quickly, because I think it's, as we've just played the president's statement, it's pretty clear he doesn't want another shutdown, doesn't believe there will be, that if the compromise, as it's being reported, makes it to his desk without more restrictions, a bunch of amendments, and they just kind of take the legislative text, you know, here it goes, that even though the president's not getting everything he wants, it's a compromise. You're not going to ever love it because it's bipartisan in nature. So it's not just Republicans coming up with the deal. It's Republicans and Democrats, both in the House and the Senate, coming up with the deal. So the big question now, I think, Than, with that commentary, Congress has now heard from the president, is can they get this through their processes without a bunch of amendments that make it impossible for it to pass or put the president in a situation where he'd have to veto it. But I think it would be more likely that just nothing gets through.
Yeah, so if it comes out, if it's reported, Jordan, as it's being reported, that resolution would be privileged on both the floor of the House and the Senate. So it should be able to get a vote without amendment at that stage. And honestly, with the president saying that he supports it, I think there's a pretty good chance it would pass both chambers. But I would give you this caution. It doesn't have privilege right now because we don't have legislative text. So I think the president is basing his remarks over what people are telling him. But look, there could be a change between now and when we see the legislative form, and that might be something that doesn't garner his support. So we need to wait for that threshold before saying for sure.
And again, I want to take this phone call and from Lisa in California, who's been holding on. Lisa, welcome to the show. You're on the air now, and then break some other news as well.
Hi, welcome. Thank you, Jay and Jordan, for all hard work.
Thanks, Lisa.
Letting us have a voice. Giving us a voice.
Thank you. You're on the air.
Okay. Well, my question is, I want to know why the president is not using the emergency declaration and what does it entail for him to use it?
Yep.
And also the supplementing funds he just talked about. Is that what he was last night? He talked about saying that the wall is being built, but he's supplementing it a different way. Coming from allocated funds not adequately being
so
used?
So here's what's interesting. So El Chapo, who is the head of the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico, just got convicted on all counts, 10 counts. You know, the jury deliberated for over a week in this, I think because of the complications and involved. And it's unique. You know, it's always tough to get these guys. But he now will face life in prison at his sentencing. Than, there is funding for instance, on drug corridor funding. There are ways to get to resources without necessarily declaration of national emergency. He still could do that, by the way. That's not off the table. The White House has been clear about that. The president's been clear about that. But there are other funding mechanisms, too.
Yeah, and this news about El Chapo is so relevant here, Jordan, because the DEA, President Trump, through the DEA, has authority to declare certain areas drug corridors if there's evidence that is how drugs are coming into the country. Well, Jordan, I mean, the southern border conclusively is a drug corridor. It has been for a number of years now, and you know, El Chapo's conviction is just another reminder of that. So the president could designate some dollars, designate the southern border as a drug corridor, and build some wall using dollars that way. Probably couldn't get to the full amount, but again, going back to the suggestion that you made, would he take the $1.37 billion in this deal, maybe add some money through the drug corridor, find some money elsewhere to get to the number he needs? Jordan, I think that's entirely possible.
All right, folks, again, we're continuing to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. The idea here, too, on the National Security Emergency Declaration, Harry, we've looked at it. Again, we think the president's fully within his power executive act to take this executive action because authorized by Congress. It's not a gray area. He's authorized to take these actions by Congress. So he's got constitutional power and legislative power, and that hopefully the courts wouldn't start questioning what is and what is an emergency, because that's not where Congress delegated the power. They told that the president gets to decide that and declare that. At the same time, I think the president is cautious on it, because if you can get Congress to fund it, if you can find the money other places, you won't have the legal battle of that.
I think that's absolutely correct. So in the long run, it may make more sense to see if the president can achieve a legislative outcome. But I also think it makes sense for the president to maintain his right under both the Constitution and under the statutory powers granted by Congress to declare a national emergency. It's also important to note, parenthetically, that there's a recent Ninth Circuit Court decision establishing the president's power to continue to build the wall, notwithstanding the claims made by, I believe, certain environmentalist groups. And there is an item in the news today suggesting that the Ninth Circuit disagrees with the opponents of the president's attempt to build the wall. I think overall, most analysts believe that if the national emergency issue goes before the United States Supreme Court, that the United States Supreme Court, as presently constituted, more likely than not, would allow the president's national emergency declaration to go forward. Keep in mind, under the National Emergencies Act, if Congress disagrees with the president, Congress would have some authority and power to cut back the president's decision. But that may indeed still be subject to a presidential veto. So I think in the long run, it's preferable to come up with a legislative solution. But clearly, if I were advising the president, I would maintain the president's right to declare a national emergency. I think the evidence on the ground clearly establishes that there is indeed a national emergency on our southern border.
Let's take Julie's phone call. Julie in Virginia, thanks for holding on. You're on the air now.
Hi, yeah. I'm part of the shutdown. We went through the 30-something days, no pay. My husband's been serving 32-plus years to this country.
Yep.
And I find it appalling that they even thought of that number. I mean, it's just a slap in the face for all of us who care about security of this country. The Democrats are out to get to undermine him in any way that they can. And if nobody sees that they keep throwing these little poisonous pills, they want to defund Homeland Security in any way that they can, especially ICE.
They've been out front with that, Julie. I mean, let's get Julie a signed copy of the book, too, if she's been holding on. And let me just get your reaction, Julie, quickly. I mean, so you've been a family impacted by this, but you're saying you'd be willing for the president, if he had to shut down again?
I didn't want him to open back up.
Yeah. I mean, so, and again, you can speak to it. Yeah, I'm sure you're calling from, you know, Northern Virginia kind of area, government service, and your husband, you went through the month already of a government shutdown. Again, you get the back pay eventually, but you got to pay your bills in between. Some banks are okay. But Wes, the bigger issue here is it looks like we're not heading towards that at this moment, that Nancy Pelosi, even though she said not one cent, not $1 for a border wall, is going to at least allow a vote. I don't know if she'll vote for it, but she's going to allow a vote and allow her members to vote on this legislation.
Yeah, and that is certainly a win as far as the administration goes. Also, we're 7 months away from a new fiscal year and new funding. There are some reports out that the Office of Management and Budget has discovered other ways, minus a national emergency, that the president might find some more money. But what's happening in all this, Jordan, and the caller is so correct, the true colors of both the Republicans and the Democrats are coming out. There's a large element of the Democrat Party that does want open borders. They do not want immigration reform, and they want to abolish ICE.
It's interesting. Senator Lindsey Graham just tweeted, "The Democrats' hatred of President Real Donald Trump," as Twitter handle, "resulted in them missing a great opportunity to provide more border security and a better life for DACA and work permit recipients. So they didn't get, you know, they didn't, there's nothing about that in here. They weren't willing to go there.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.